absolutely flashed the two right in the face of Bob Nightingale, who says there could be two Diamondbacks leaving town. Could be. Could
Bobby
be.
Knows all about flashing the two on a Cowbell Friday, does he not? Of course, our number two on the Doug and Wolf Show, Savages in the Morning, broadcasting high atop the bell tower of the Auction Community Studios. Good morning, brothers.
One thing that we have never asked Bob Nightingale, who joins us right now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, baseball insider, USA Today, is this question. Bob, do you listen to the Doug and Wolf Show because you can't find anything else or because you actually enjoy it?
I actually enjoy it.
Good. Cheap plug. That was all that was about right there.
Bobby, how you doing this morning?
Doing great, guys.
You know, it's the best day of the year, right? It's the Friday before Thanksgiving. You understand that, right?
Wolf's already cheering about a three-day week. It's just like, it's already excited.
I'm going full-on French today, Bobby.
Meaning the 30-hour work week? Is that what
Indeed,
you're saying?
Indeed, no doubt about it.
Bob, boy, you certainly got some attention around here yesterday. Two tweets that grabbed a lot of people and grabbed a lot of attention. So let's start with the one that has to do with the trade. Do you, as you sit here today, granted you're going to be able to change your mind later, but on November 16th of 2018, do you think Zach Greinke will be pitching for the 2019 Diamondbacks?
I'd be stunned if he is. It really would be. I mean, they're shopping him everywhere. And, you know, it may take a package with a with Paul Goldschmidt, you know, just because of the money involved. But, yeah, I'd be very surprised. And they're full intent to have a rebuild here. And you can't rebuild when you have a pitcher making $34.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bobby, the packaging of Zach Greinke and Paul Goldschmidt, do you think that's likely?
I know teams have talked about it at the GM meetings and the owners' meetings. One team for sure is St. Louis Cardinals. They need a big power bat. They would like another arm. And, Zach can reject trades of 15 teams. I don't think St. Louis would be on there. I think he would actually, love pitching in a city like St. Louis, where it's all baseball,
yes,
all positive, everything.
And I mean, we know that he loves the bat. We know how much he loves to bat, so that's a National League team as well. Stay on this, Bob, if you don't mind, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I'm wondering, I really like something that Keith Law had written, that Goldie trade should net you four prospects, all four good, two kind of elite. But I get the fact if you're going to package these two, you're doing it to get out of the contract from Greinke. So if you agree Goldie's worth four, how many elite prospects would you get if you're trading them both together as a package deal to get out of the Greinke contract?
Well, in the case of Goldschmidt, I don't believe you get four prime prospects.
Okay.
You only have 1 year left in the contract.
Okay.
I could see one prime prospect. You know, maybe the second guy being some guys, some team's 15th best prospect, like that, then a couple others. But
okay,
the fact you can only control them, unless the Diamondbacks allowed permission and said you get 72 hours to negotiate a deal, I don't think they would do that because I think it can, hurt his value.
Okay.
If he's looking for a lot more money than teams are willing to spend. And Greinke, then you're only talking about some fringe prospects, really, because you're trading him, really, just to get rid of the contract.
Yeah. Okay.
Bobby, exactly how much do you think the Diamondbacks would have to pay of Zach Greinke's contract? How much do you think they'd have to pay if they moved just Zach Greinke for some other team?
He's got $34.5 million a year left in that contract for three more years. I would think they'd have to pay down at least $10 million a year off that, so $30 million. He's still a very good pitcher, mm-hmm, as still had a fine,
yes,
season. Takes the ball every 5 days, so you can still argue he's a $20 million pitcher, but just not a $34 million pitcher.
Makes sense. This is Bob Nightingale, baseball insider for USA Today, friend of the Doug and Wolf Show that we've already tried to establish. You can follow him at B Nightingale. E is in the middle between Knight and Gale if you want help in spelling it. Okay, let's go to your the other information. The Diamondbacks doing heavy studying with the Atlanta Braves, moving from downtown a couple years ago to the northern suburbs. How is this just, hey, let's just just explore, let's just get some information, or do you think it's kind of a step one to move up the 101?
Yeah, I think it's a big step because teams are looking at what's happening here. It started in St. Louis. They have a thing called Ballpark Village where shops and entertainment district around it. That's about a little over 100,000 square feet. You know, this is over a million square feet in Atlanta, and it's a gold mine. You have shops, restaurants, bars right outside the ballpark. And so if you're the Diamondbacks and whoever partner you want to be with, you do that. You don't have to get public funding, really, because that's going to provide all the funding for you. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of it, as Rob Manfred, the commissioner, was saying yesterday. It really kind of avoids public funding. So if you're the Diamondbacks, in the talk is they would go, you know, somewhere close to where the Cubs spring training complex is, you know, that side of town over by the freeway. You know, it could be a gold mine financially.
Well, Bobby, what are you hearing about Patrick Corbin and the possibilities with Corbin?
I mean, you hear mostly with him, either the Yankees or the Phillies. Obviously, you grew up a Yankee fan in Syracuse, generations of Yankee fans of the family. Philadelphia's got a ton of money. I think he's going to get the most money by any free agent pitcher. I think you're going to look at a 5 years in excess of $100 million for Corbin.
Same question. What's the market on Pollock?
You know, a lot less. Teams are kicking the tires. You know, teams like Cincinnati Reds are looking into it. You know, what's hurt him, of course, is just all the injuries.
Yes.
And, you know, when he's healthy, you know, fine center fielder, you know, to my little pop in the bat, too. But just the injury has scared teams.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see him more in the $50, $60 million range.
You know, I'm wondering, okay, Greinke, we've talked about, again, if you just tuned in, Bob Nightingale, baseball insider with USA Today, talking about Greinke, talking about Goldie, Pollock and Corbin probably, you know, 95% gone. If that's all the case, if these four guys are gone, who's safe? I mean, why stop there? Do you think Robbie Ray would be traded? Do you think Jake Lamb would be traded? I just name a name other than maybe Ahmed and Marte. Who's safe if you're already getting rid of those four?
You know, I don't think anybody's safe. I really don't. I mean, I think everybody's, they're going to listen in on everybody, you know, whether it's a Marte, Lamb, you know, you name it. And that's what you got to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know in Chicago got, you know, big attention when, you know, Theo Epstein says he'll listen to everybody, including Chris Bryant. But that's the way it is. You know, I remember covering the Padres back in the day with Kevin Towers, and he kept telling teams, hey, if you want to make offers for Tony Gwynn or Trevor Hoffman, I'm going to listen. It may cost a steep price,
yeah.
But go ahead and talk about it.
Yeah. Bobby, I'm going to come all the way back to Paul Goldschmidt and Zach Greinke, of course, but I want to focus on Goldie right now. What do you think the odds are he's a Diamondback in 2019?
I think that was more 50-50. You know, I think they want a steep price for him, and that's such a hard sell. Just, you know, as far as talking about the heart and soul of the franchise, you know, everybody in baseball, you know, knows what he means to a team, zero ego. They also feel for the guy. I mean, when you talk to agents and clubs, they say his contract that he signed cost him conservatively between $125 and $150 million. That contract was that bad for his talent.
Sure.
And, you know, with a new agent now, you know, he's going to want to make up for some of that thing.
This is interesting then. Who do you think it's going to be harder to convince to trade him? Mike Hazen or Ken Kendrick?
I think Ken Kendrick. I think it's a very tough one for ownership. You know, to say, God, are you sure? You know, I just think it's a that real tough one for the fans. I mean, you can trade away every single player in the organization, but trading him away, tough one for the fans to swallow. And they're going to be mad. They're going to be lining up the switchboard and everything else, sending emails. They're going to be furious if he gets traded.
Yeah.
Bobby, happy Thanksgiving.
Man, that's a great talk, Bob. Thanks for your time.
You too.
Absolutely.
Take care, guys.
Okay, you too. There's Bob Nightingale joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. You can go to Coulter on Camelback.com, CoulterNissan.com, or CoulterTempe.com for your next new or pre-owned car. Again, free plug for Bob Nightingale. It's at B Nightingale to follow him. USA Today featured reporter when it comes to Major League Baseball. With the Coyotes actually scoring another shorthanded goal, ASU trying to get to a potential Rose Bowl, the Cardinals with a winning opportunity on Sunday, we thought never in a million years would there be a day the Diamondbacks on a Friday in November would be the number one story. But with Bob Nightingale's tweets that one heavy exploration into the Braves' move to the northern suburbs and the possibility that could lead to a move to Scottsdale and the chance that Goldie and Greinke could be traded, and he listed one team as the team that's probably kind of the front runner that might grab them both. We'll tell you who that is next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Ready to roll into the power half hour portion of the Doug and Wolf Show every Friday. Doug and Wolf NFL insider of ClaytonFootball.com, John Clayton, will join us at 7:30. Talk a lot of Cardinals and a lot about the Southern California fires affecting the amazing game of Monday Night Football, Chiefs and Rams, and then last night's Seahawks game, in which he was on the sideline for, looking at the Green Bay Packers as it's starting to swirl around McCarthy. It is starting to swirl for Green Bay.
Yes.
So it'll be interesting to talk to John about that. And then at 7:45, our exclusive conversation, he doesn't talk regularly to the media. The only place you can hear Steve Keim is the Doug and Wolf Show every Friday at 7:45. And we'll try to get you the latest on Buda Baker and his health going into this Raiders game. But to me, the number one story here in town is everything that we've learned from Bob Nightingale, as Bob Nightingale is the baseball insider for USA Today. And he kind of looks around and says, okay, if I'm looking at the tea leaves here of what I'm seeing, I'm seeing Goldie 50-50 Diamondbacks, Greinke about 98-2 leaving the Diamondbacks.
You know, I get the sense that Goldschmidt was in a team just saying he only has 1 year left of that contract. But I don't think that Greinke is on the team. I think they're going to have to eat some of that money. But I think they move Greinke and go on. But I think, you know, everybody's up for sale.
Who was the guy we were talking to just a couple of months ago when he said it was 90% that Goldie was going to be back? Now, wasn't that Bob? Wasn't it Bob that said that? I thought it was at the time. But listen, to me, I hate the idea of packaging Paul Goldschmidt with Zach Greinke to make some type of deal. Because all you're doing is watering down what you're going to get for Paul Goldschmidt, if in fact that's going to happen. Listen, I don't like the fact of trading Goldie to begin with, period. I'm hoping that Paul Goldschmidt is going to be a Diamondback for life. But I really don't like the part where you're going to tell me now all of a sudden you're going to package Paul Goldschmidt with Zach Greinke so you can dump $14 million a year.
And then the package part of it, he actually gave us a team.
I know teams have talked about it. At the GM meetings and the owners meetings, one team for sure is St. Louis Cardinals. They need a big power bat. They would like another arm. And, Zach can reject trades of 15 teams. I don't think St. Louis would be on there. I think he would actually, love pitching in a city like St. Louis where it's all baseball,
yes.
All positive, everything.
Nobody wants to eat $10 to $14 million a year. I realize that. Nobody wants to do that. But honestly, you're going to take less. You're going to throw in Paul Goldschmidt so you don't have to pay $14 million a year. I don't like that. I don't like that at all, especially when you're talking about 150. You're talking about a franchise player. You're talking about a guy that, I honestly, you say as well, Doug Lease, is probably headed for the Hall of Fame at some point in time. And I believe that. And you're going to tell me you're going to, we packaged them together with a guy that we overpaid. So we basically traded him for a salary dump instead of getting everything we could possibly get out of Paul Goldschmidt.
I think this situation is unbelievably fluid. And the reason why I say it's unbelievably fluid is here are two guys that are pretty much in the know. Keith Law is a talent evaluator saying Goldie is worth four prospects, two of them being elite. This is Tim Kirkjian, who was joining on the Burns and Gambo show, and he said that, no, not really.
I think it's less, not because he's less of a player, but for exactly what you said. Teams are hanging on to their young players, seeing that the Astros and the Cubs and more recently the Yankees have thrived by keeping their homegrown guys.
So he doesn't think Goldie will drive a high price in as it relates to elite contracts, or excuse me, elite players. And that's exactly the same thing that Bob Nightingale told us. So because of that, if you want to get anything for Paul Goldschmidt, you might be right. The best way to do it is to then move him as it doesn't relate to Zach Greinke. But if you want to get out of that deal, it's still it becomes, what are you going to do with the $14 million? Because I like exactly what Bob Nightingale said. And if you trade a Greinke, how much do you have to eat?
You know, he's got what, 34.5 million a year left in that contract for three more years. I would think they'd have to pay down at least $10 million a year off that. So,
and I like what he said there, because the way he related is, think about it. If Zach Greinke's on the free agent market, how much would you be willing to pay?
Yeah.
And I bet most teams would look at about a 2 to 3 year deal around $20 to $25 million a year is how much they'd be willing to pay. So they look at it this exact same way. So now I'm willing to pay you about that same much, so you're going to have to chip in the amount of money to get it from 34.5 to whatever I'm willing to pay.
Yeah. I just don't like the idea of conflating Paul Goldschmidt and the trading of Paul Goldschmidt. Stop and think about that. Would that be a big deal, Diamondback fans?
Yes.
Would that be a big deal to you out there listening right now? It'd be a big deal in the Wolf League compound. I can tell you that right now. The trading of Paul Goldschmidt. Now we're going to conflate that with the dump, if you will, of Zach Greinke? Does that philosophically make sense to you? It doesn't make sense to me at all. If you're going to trade Paul Goldschmidt, okay, you're going to trade Paul Goldschmidt. I get that. Get real value for Paul Goldschmidt, and don't conflate the two with Zach Greinke.
One real small factor in a Paul Goldschmidt
one's
trade.
One's a mistake that you feel like you may have made organizationally, and the other is not.
If a team that trades for him is going to want to try to get him signed long-term, I would assume. And I think one factor that's going to be heavy in Goldie's life, grapefruit or cactus. St. Louis Cardinals are in the Grapefruit League.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that would make Goldie a lot more willing to sign with you is if he knows he's staying right here at home through the whole offseason and all of spring training versus another 6 weeks gone from home by going to the Grapefruit League. That actually would play into him just a little bit. You got an opportunity to hear the general manager, Steve Keim. He's going to be joining us coming up in about 15 minutes. Health of Buda Baker, what does it take to protect Josh Rosen, and what does he expect from the team against the Raiders? That's coming up at 7:45 this morning, our exclusive conversation. If you missed any of the Bob Nightingale conversation, this would be a great time to download the Doug and Wolf podcast. So whenever you hear us talking about something, like we didn't even have a chance right there to get to the fact that Bob Nightingale hinted the Diamondbacks are studying the Braves' move from downtown Atlanta to the northern suburbs and whether or not that's a good move for the Diamondbacks. You want to hear about that? Then download the Doug and Wolf podcast. Subscribe right now on iPhone or Android, and you'll never miss any of the show. This week, the podcast is brought to you by PhoenixHousePainting.com. Time for us to look at the Cardinals and whether or not this is the most winnable game. Well, we know it's the most winnable game on the schedule, but is it the only one left? John Clayton, what's the future of protecting Josh Rosen? And what's the future of this great Monday night game? We'll talk to the Doug and Wolf NFL Insider next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Doug and Wolf.
Giving you inside information on the NFL every week.
Dude, what's happening?
NFL Insider, John Clayton.
Mom, Liz there!
Joins Doug and Wolf now. Brought to you by Courtesy Chevrolet, serving the Valley for over 60 years. Number one for a reason. Visit CourtesyChev.com.
The Doug and Wolf Insider to the NFL, ClaytonFootball.com. John Clayton joins us every Friday at 7:30. John, any truth to the rumors that Cardinals-Raiders was almost flexed into Sunday Night Football?
They were thinking about it, but I think there was a game, but maybe one of the other games, maybe the Giants. I think they were thinking about putting one of those Giant games on there.
Johnny, sarcasm is so beneath you.
No, it's not. Both of us are funny at it. We're good at it. Thank you, John. Good morning. How are you?
Good. I'm great. How are you?
We're good. Hey, we're jacked up because we think, hey, there could be a win right now as the Raiders have one more sack than Khalil Mack does right now. It's 8-7, team versus Mack. The Cardinals, this looks like a very winnable game. How important is it that the Cardinals? Well, I actually believe it's important because of the morale of the team, the future of Steve Wilks. Well, what does it mean if they lose? How is Steve Wilks going to explain that? What say you as more of a global view on this game?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that you win the Bay Area, because already two wins against the 49ers and one win against the Raiders, and that means you got three wins in the Bay. So it's like you get the air quality index that's going to be able to go well. That's encouraging. So I guess you could say, no, I think it's just important just to get a win to try to keep everything going in a more positive direction, because it's been so negative. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to be ranked number 32 in the league. There's no doubt about that. And the Raiders are so terrible. They are absolutely awful.
Johnny,
wow.
On that note right there, when you look at what John Gruden has done, what do you think he's doing? What do you think John Gruden is up to right now?
He has no idea. I mean, because this is just as badly as run of a personnel decision-making process as I've ever seen, because there's no plan. It's almost like he goes in each day and it's like, okay, what disastrous move can I make for this franchise? They got 32 new players on the team. I mean, you go in and you're supposed to be, you're thinking, oh, you're rebuilding. You have the oldest roster in football. That's not good. And now all of a sudden he's starting to weed out some of the guys. Well, actually, I don't know if he's weeding it out. I think the players are weeding it out. The guys in their 30s, they all want out of there. I mean, how many guys on that team want to just retire? I mean, there was a story earlier about Jordy Nelson wanting out, Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, he retired. I mean, it is just an absolute disaster, probably as bad as I've ever seen.
Remember, if you didn't hear what John Clay just said there, he started covering the NFL around the town, around the time most of you weren't born yet that are listening to the Doug and Wolf Show right now. John, I have to ask, bad football decisions or just plain tanking with the Raiders?
No, bad football decisions. Because, you come in, you start talking about, oh, we're here to try to win a championship. And if you're trying to tank, I mean, how do you go with the oldest roster in football? I mean, the last one I remember doing something like that was Matt Millen when he took over in Detroit, and he was trying to rebuild that team, and he had an old roster. The Raider roster was 27.4 years of age on each average player, and that's just horrible. I mean, the 15 players that were 30 years old, that's not good. And you look at just about most roster decisions, then you trade away your best players. Mm-hmm. You just shake your head and say, what are you doing?
Speaking of what are you doing, talk about Mexico City and Estadio Azteca. What happened there?
Just poor management. I blame this more on the city than I do the league, although the league has to, I think, make a quicker decision on this. They waited until Tuesday. They could have probably decided this a month ago how bad the stadium was. But you go out and you have a concert that tears up the stadium. Then you have all these games that were scheduled for soccer. And understanding that if you're going to have a soccer field, it's going to be a little bit looser with the way that they have the grass, because you want it better for the soccer players. But that doesn't fit for football. And so now you get to the Tuesday before the game, you have all the things going on with the Rams. And honestly, I mean, what the Rams went through as far as the people in the organization, the players and that, just horrible. 75 to 100 players, people in the organization, about 10 to 15 players, coaches and that, they had to be evacuated. Oh. And so now you go through and you suffer through all those difficult things, and then the next thing you know you're training for the high altitude and you have to move all the way to Colorado Springs just to try to do that, and so you have no time. I mean, there's still people that haven't been able to move back to their homes yet, but they can't because they're sitting there in Colorado Springs now training for a game that's going to be in Los Angeles. Just absolute disaster.
Yeah.
Talking to John Clayton, the Doug and Wolf NFL insider of claytonfootball.com here on the Doug and Wolf Show. We do it every Friday at 7:30. A lot of articles lately, and this is the time of year, especially after the Browns have already made a move, where coaching hot seat is the big topic. On a John Clayton coaching hot seat topic, would Steve Wilks be on it?
I still shy away from that. It's still hard to imagine in after 1 year that you do it. Like, for example, for ClaytonFootball.com, I put 11 different people that are on the hot seat because I think this is going to be maybe as strange of an offseason as we're going to have since like about 2009, 2010, when there was about 11 changes. I had 11. I didn't put Wilkes on there because I think he's a good coach. And also, it's hard to imagine after 1 year you can do it. But I guess you'd have to say that he might be on that list. But I didn't put him on my list. I guess it's too extensive. And when you're talking about 11 coaching changes, where are you going to go as far as finding the right coaches? I mean, you know, everybody seems to want around the league an offensive head coach who can call plays. Well, you're starting to run out of those guys. You know, I think I was at the game last night, Seattle going against Green Bay. I think Mike McCarthy is going to be available. But is he going to go to Cleveland with John Dorsey? I mean, I think he'll get 3 to 4 to 5 offers. But, I mean, you're running out of coaching candidates if all of a sudden you start to go with a first-year coach and you let him go.
How hot, because that's exactly where I was going, how hot is the seat for McCarthy, and would McCarthy's free agency affect Steve Wilkes at all?
Well, I mean, again, I think that, Mike will be at the top of the list. I thought last year, even though it hasn't worked out, that Pat Shurmur was going to be among the top people. Now, you know, John Gruden topped him getting a $10 million a year deal. But, you want an offensive play caller, and Mike McCarthy's an offensive play caller. And so, you know, it does to me look like if they don't make the playoffs, and that loss to Seattle last night, I think really puts them out of the playoff mix. It's going to be too hard to rebound that McCarthy's going to be available. But, you know, John Dorsey's going to try to get him in Cleveland. Again, I think 3 to 4 to 5 offers, but it's going to be, again, one where, you know, who are they going to be the candidates for offensive play callers? John DeFilippo in Minnesota. You've got Matt LaFleur down in Tennessee, and then you start to run out of guys.
You know, Johnny, I'm with you on Steve Wilkes. I don't think there's any way he's going to get fired this year. That's me, great. And I could be dead wrong on that. But you said you put together this list. Give me another big name other than Mike McCarthy, another big name that you think could be fired.
John Harbaugh and Jason Garrett. I mean, those are the two other guys that have experience who's been in the league for some time. If those guys don't make the playoffs, I think they're going to be available. I mean, you already know that the owner of the team in Baltimore last year, Steve Bisciotti, said that he was considering firing him this past year in 2017. Now they don't make the playoffs this year, and it looks pretty bad because now you don't know if Joe Flacco is going to be able to play this week. I think he could be available. I think it's all set up right now. If the Cowboys don't make it, that Jason Garrett is going to be let go. So I think you got three head coaches that have been there for an extended period of time that could be gone.
If you want more John Clayton in your life, you can download the Doug and Wolf podcast, or you can go to claytonfootball.com. John, good morning. Thanks again. Good to talk to you. Talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Say a little bad, Johnny.
There's JC joins us each and every Friday at 7:30, but he'll join us earlier in the week next week because of Thanksgiving. Join Burns and Gambo starting at 2 o'clock from the Safeway on Hayden, Chaparral, and Scottsdale. Francis Ford Coppola Wines will be on site with the guys, giving you the chance to win tickets to the Territorial Cup in Tucson with hotel and cash included, plus complimentary engraving your purchase of a bottle. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com. Justin Pugh's injury situation. Being on IR, replacing him. The latest on Buda Baker. Steve Keim, he's next. What's the plan to protect Josh Rosen? The exclusive conversation with the Cardinals general manager is next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Cardinals GM Steve Keim. Keim time. With Doug and Wolf.
Steve Keim calls in every Friday on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line on Friday, 7:45, to talk ball with us. Steve, good morning. Paul and Wolf here have been talking a lot this week about the positives of that Chiefs game. Do you feel the same way, even though it was a loss?
Well, I mean, I don't think there are any moral victories, but at the same time, I think that there are things that you can point at that were positive stuff heading in the right direction, which again, last week I talked about being able to run the ball effectively and stop the run. Stopping the run was something that I felt like we did a decent job of. There were a few times where they had some big plays and got guys out of gaps in our defense, but for the most part, being able to run the ball effectively was the thing that I was excited about. You know, I felt like David Johnson had his best game and really looked like the David Johnson that we remember from 2016.
Yeah, you know, Steve, I honestly, just looking at the tape, generally speaking, again, I thought maybe it was the defense's best effort considering who they were playing against and considering the fact that they were playing on the road. Be a little bit more specific, if you would, about that defense and what you're seeing from the defense from an evolution perspective.
Well, I mean, I think guys are becoming more and more comfortable within the scheme. I know that there are still some issues with the coverage concepts, you know, and guys blowing coverages that are concerning. But at the same time, the one positive is they're still playing with a lot of urgency and a lot of energy. And again, you know, from a defensive front standpoint, I think we had 5 sacks. And I know the Chiefs, prior to that, I think they gave up 2 sacks was the most. So, you know, again, we got after the quarterback, Chandler Jones, I thought had a really good game. And Marcus Golden is also rounding into form as well.
Cardinals general manager Steve Keim joining Doug and Wolf. What would you say your level of concern is as it relates to protecting Josh Rosen? Because there was some big hits. O-line didn't play well in crunch time. Obviously, it's hard with score and the talent of the other team. But that's the franchise quarterback. What are you worried about him taking too many hits? Or do you think it's the process of growing up?
Well, I mean, I think it's a combination of both, and there's no doubt that I felt like both of our tackles really struggled in that game. You know, they do have some good pass rushers on that side of the ball, but we got to do a better job protecting, and if that is implementing chips and different things from a pass protection standpoint, that's something we have to look into. But when you really, you know, when you watch the tape, the one thing that certainly jumped out was when we got behind by, I believe, it was more than double digits, you know, puts you in a situation with 6 or 7 minutes left in the game where, you know, you're running a lot of empty sets and you're doing some things where those guys are pinning their ears back, and it puts you in a tough spot because it's hard to pass protect when they know you're throwing the football every down. And that's what happened, and you know, again, in the later part of the game, and Josh took a lot of shots, and the one thing that came of it, you never like to see it, but, you know, his toughness mentally and physically certainly showed pretty strong in that game.
We're talking to the general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, Steve Keim, here on the Doug and Wolf Show. Justin Pugh, you had to put him on IR. How badly is this going to impact the offensive line?
Well, I mean, it's you know, it's never a good thing whenever you have starters go down, particularly in a league where supply and demand is such an issue at a number of positions, and none more than probably offensive line, where, you know, you're now all of a sudden you're playing guys who weren't even on your roster at the beginning of the year. I felt like O'Day actually played fairly well when he came in last week. He's got some play strength and does some things in the run game that I felt like were pretty good. But, you know, we got to continue to play as a unit. And more than anything, you know, like we talked about before, Wolf, understanding how to use your leverage and the combination blocks and playing in unison. And that's something that I feel like we've been inconsistent all year, and we got to get better.
As you sit here Friday morning, 7:51, do you know who the starting offensive line is going to be Sunday?
I do. And, you know, that's one of those things that, again, from week-to-week basis, it's we got a lot of moving parts. But, you know, we have to do some things schematically to help those guys. Again, whether it's the chips or keeping more people in to help protect. And it all gets back to running the football effectively. So, you know, once you can create some balance, you get people off the mark, you can do some stuff in the play-action game, which certainly helps. And that's where an area where I feel like Josh is very, very good is the play-action game. So moving forward, we're excited about this weekend, getting back home and playing in front of our fans.
I meant that more on a health question, you know, like DJ Humphries and then the replacing Justin Pugh. But let me ask you the same type of question, health-related. What about Buda? Do you expect Buda Baker to play Sunday?
I think it'll be more of a game time decision. I will say this. I mean, the one thing about Buda Baker is he is tough as nails. So if he can play or if he even has a shot at it, I'll expect to be ready to go. But, you know, he's one of the bright spots on our defense so far this year for me. He has played lights out and continues to do more and more things within this defense that excites you.
Steve, what are you seeing from your rookie quarterback? Not just the tangibles, But talk a little bit about the intangibles as well.
Well, I mean, I think more than anything, Wolf, we talked about it before, is continuing to improve. And more so than anything with him, it's probably seeing the field. You know, there are times where probably in the first couple games that he played, he had some growing pains in terms of seeing the field and finding the open receiver. And I think he's getting more and more comfortable with that. Again, I said it last week, him and Byron Leftwich have a great relationship. And Josh works his tail off. So all the things that I've seen from Josh, not only physically, which are things that excite you, but just the work ethic, the intangibles, all the things in terms of preparation, he has shown to be a true leader in that locker room.
Steve, you know, this time of year, there's 900 articles being written with the two-word phrase hot seat. And on some articles, Steve Wilks is on that list. Some articles, he's not. Is he on your hot seat?
Shoot, how many of those are my one? You know, I mean, it's one of the, hey, listen, this is a results-based business. And at the end of the day, not only do we internally have expectations, but the fans, I know, have expectations, and rightfully so. And this year has certainly not gone in the direction that we anticipated. But that's something that I'm not even focused on right now. Right now, it's all about winning football games and showing progress, the type of progress that gets us excited and propels us into 2019, which, again, I'm starting to see a lot of things that are exciting me, and not only on the offensive side of the ball, but some things defensively as well.
On that note right there, Steve, talk a little bit about what you saw from David Johnson. I thought it was his best game. What did you see?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt, Wolf. And I think it's getting back to some of the things, again, that he did well in 16. And that's whether it's certain run plays that are called, you know, whether it's the way he presses the line of scrimmage, using his vision. But even more than anything, it's, to me, creating those isolated mismatches in the passing game. And you saw that last week with you know, again, different things that make him dynamic, in my opinion. And again, that's getting on linebackers and safeties and all the different things that he can do from a pass catching standpoint. So it was good to see him back. Again, moving forward, I think Byron will certainly try to feature him.
Kind of following what Wolf just asked, as you compliment the offense, what's the most impressive thing you've seen from your new offensive coordinator?
Well, I mean, I think it's the creativity, the trying to establish balance. The one thing that Byron really does well, I think, is when you see him run certain plays, there's a rhyme and a reason for everything. It may not be for that particular play in terms of big playability, but it's something that he may be setting up for a few plays later. So really excited about where this offense is going with Byron. And again, I think he's done a really nice job.
Steve, what do you want to see happen over the remainder of the season? I mean, if you had a power poll, if you will, of things you want to see happen, what would they be?
Well, you know, I think, Wolf, aside from a roster standpoint, you know, we're seeing a lot of rookies play, I think that'll continue. And some of the guys that we brought in, you know, that come off the street, and we've done a lot of that over the last several years. Just to see where some of those guys are at. Some of them will be guys that will be back on our roster next year, and there'll be some players that aren't. And I want to see some of these guys, you know, really take one step forward in terms of having this opportunity. You know, again, that's what we sell to these players when they come in for workouts or visits. You know, really, this is another opportunity for you, and take advantage of it.
On that note, Steve, Hassan Reddick, how is he developing?
You know what? I think Hassan is continued to do some good things. I mean, the one thing you can't teach, as you know, is speed and athleticism. And Hassan Reddick has elite speed and athleticism. I think the little things that are continuing to evolve for him are reading offensive line play and run schemes and those sort of things to make sure that he's in the right gap or he's getting over the top of blocking schemes. But again, you know, the things that you cannot teach are coverage ability and speed and athleticism and running to the football with effort. And that's certainly something Hassan has done.
If you're evaluating the 2019 draft and a player is cold and he gets an argument with his coach about a coat, would that affect your desire to draft that player at all?
I cannot confirm or deny that I'm flying out of Houston this morning.
Take that coat off. Oh, my goodness.
Good to talk to you, Steve.
Thank you,
good
brother.
Luck this weekend.
Thanks, man. Talk to you soon. Okay,
there's
man.
Steve Keim, general manager, Arizona Cardinals, joining
we
us.
We got to talk about that. Seriously.
On the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. You can go to CoulterNissan.com, CoulterTempe.com, or you can go to CoulterOnCamelback.com for your next new or pre-owned car. If you didn't see it, I'll tell you what I was talking about the coat and about Steve Keim and his words on who's really on the hot seat. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.